Blog Talk Radio.
Put your trays and seats in the upright position. Fasten your seatbelts. It's Masonic Effects. Hello. Hello to the world. To all of you sitting wherever you happen to be with joining us in this conversation, this ongoing exchange of ideas. And it's a pleasure to have you. Thanks for tuning in again. No, I haven't forgot. I haven't done a shout out for a little while, but we'll get around to that from the Far East to all of the continents. Yeah, my goodness, we have listeners joining us, and that's lovely. It's very reaffirming, isn't it? How to look at masonry has always been a shifting kind of a task or a project. I like these days. I like to think that our lodges are projects within these different and very big structures and envelopes that allow us to function. And I think about the propriety. There may be there's other ways of studying philosophy and religion, looking at religion without mentioning it. How do we do that? That's very curious the way we do it. But this isn't exclusive. Although there are pundits, even from within, will point out that we must stay mired in mediocrity or that's elitism. Those are, you know, in spite of that, the masonry is far more exclusive than elite, far more, far more. And the benefits come pretty much according to the individual's ability and their diligence. How much work do they put in on themselves? And so when we hear people struggling with time and how to manage that, we know that they haven't found that balance, and we can help them with that. But before we just blame all of the shortcomings of individuals on masonry and what we haven't done, let's also take a look at the individual responsibility. Huh? How about we do that? I'm thinking that if I threw you at your age, think about back to the age when you're over 21 and you became a Mason, okay, or not because of your local circumstance, but you were initiated. If I, at that age, if I threw you a set of keys to a car, would you first think to get in and drive away without a license? Would you think of getting in and driving it without knowing how to? Oh, yes. Well, you know, if we have the mindset of a very silly 15-year-old, we would. Yeah, of course, you know, just give me the keys. Or there's always, and I'm not talking about the exceptions, you know, the farm kids that learn, you know, you're driving a truck out to the fields when you're 12 or 13 years old or whatever. Not that, you know that. That's the exception to the, I'm talking mainstream. And you know exactly the point that I'm making here, don't you? It's the cavalier attitude. Would you want to drive before you got in a car? Take me to the airport. Would you want to fly before you took a pilot's license? You would, wouldn't you? And your motivation, perhaps it's the travel excitement. You like big machines. Well, of course, you know. And you have the ability, and you know, and you have the ability to be taught. And you carry that responsibility. You know, those are interesting people. That's not an exclusive. That part of life isn't exclusive. There's a great many people that are carry responsibilities for other people. The different forms, of course. You would have need first. Then come to the door of masonry, and then all of a sudden the uninformed. We shouldn't have this conversation led by the uninformed. No. I just did a little article on that on a Facebook page. So you should, you know, that explains this a little bit, this thought bubble a little more. We would expect that a man would have a need, yeah? And that in the pursuit, depending on the depth or the range or the form of that need, he would search out that function within masonry. Now we would need to sort that out, wouldn't we? We would need to sort out the function first. Before you come near us, talk to us about need. You talk, tell me. We'll do it quietly here. Nobody will listen. Nobody will hear. Tell me what the need is that brings you to the door. And without that, why are you coming to the door? You don't have a need? You don't have a need for what? Well, we are a values-based kind of organization where we focus on something that's very strange. You don't have to shave your head and wear a saffron robe. We offer up, come in your civvies, and we'll talk about self-awareness. And you do that not constantly on display. Sometimes we're in public with each other. Sometimes we're in public with the profane world outside of our lodge, but more often it's within our own minds, in our solitude. But we're quick to. I think some people are very quick to shift the fault off the mediocrity of members actually, onto the organization. Something's wrong with the organization. Well, my goodness, if I give you that mindset, if I give you that task, find something wrong. Oh, my goodness. How easy is that? Find something wrong with this beautiful sunrise. Find something wrong with this walk through the woods. And here where I am, we have deep forests. Our governments have been trying to cut them down to make toilet paper or a newsprint. Because of that, you know, the dollar, you know, you want to get that, you know, tear up the land in order to make profit. But there is still remnants of old forest where you can see the grandeur of this country. But the country is still largely covered with the massive forests, and the walks through them, there's a sound, a smell, it's a healing, it's recovery there's a solace to it, and it's remarkable, and it changes at different points in the season. Let's take that walk. When we walk through there, the experience is not the same for everybody. especially if you're feeling pressured, you know, and you're just so distracted by what's going on around. How long does it take to recalibrate, readjust, and take that deep breath and connect with what's going on with that, with what's going on during the walk? And it's especially interesting sometimes we walk across the forest and the pine needles are so thick, it's like a cushion under our feet and so quiet. No crackling, it's just a sponge. Or when we cross a mossy part, it's remarkable. And then the light diffuses through the trees. It's like theater. if you have a bit of imagination, it's like theater. And then you look at what seems to be sharpened. Something happens, and you look inside. What's happening? Some of us will march on through to get to the other side as quickly as possible. They're not on a journey. I say that quite clearly, not on a journey. And to think that you might go into that kind of environment to actually read, to bring your book and bring your folding chair and sit and just sit and be, just to be in that atmosphere. I'm not expecting everybody to have a sketchbook and charcoals with them, no. Or to put on and be listening to, listening to Pavarotti. Put on your earbuds. You want to do that there. You want to listen to the breezes and the whistling through the trees. You want to. But how you're taught that, you either by self-discovery or being with somebody that shows you. And by appreciating that. You don't walk through that and you don't appreciate when you're feeling under siege, you're feeling you're being judged. You don't. You can't access that part of you. Oh, masonry makes that clear to us. You know, some of these incredible narratives have explained that to us for a very long time. But then we ought not to be troubled too much when men don't pay any attention to it. We're not a doctrine. We're not here to indoctrinate. We are here to present opportunity. And you are absolutely right. We have so many flaws. We are infallible top to bottom. How can we possibly function? But we do. Because it's masonry takes us beyond our fallibility. Where we begin to understand that we're not dominant, we're part of what's going on around us. We don't own masonry, we're part of it. Sounds funny to even say that. Do you own masonry? Do you own your own philosophy, you know, your own way of understanding the world around you? We do recognize that a lot of apprentices that come to our door have lived in their own minds for a very, very long time. And that's isolating. Now, do we expect that they're going to give up that habit because they're around us? Nah, we shouldn't. We shouldn't. Helping a person overcoming their own sense of limitation is unworkable if the person really isn't asking that question of themselves. I like to think of that as learning to listen to yourself. Learning when you walk out and you've done something really remarkably stupid, do you recognize it and ask yourself why you keep doing that? Why do you keep embarrassing yourself in front of people? Oh, the bullies usually have that pang of anxiety and angst leader in their life, eh? When they realize they're isolated, nobody can tolerate them. Oh, they can point fingers and find excuses and blame everybody. The usual whipping posts in this are women. I'm alone, but it's all those women that are terrible. You're a thoughtless clod, but it's the fault of everybody around. That's how we talk about that. These enormous egos, eh? And I've talked about that too much. I'm tired of that. Masonry, you would think we would be better at filtering that out, but there's so many of us doing the filter. There's so many of us engaging that it's some people, you know, you're going to have a very poor introduction to Masonry, but given the right talents, those people will continue and go on and thrive in spite of their poor start. Others will get a good start and go on and thrive. And maybe they do develop depth faster, but I don't know that. And I don't know that faster is necessary. Part of training and outcome, it has to do with the quality of mentoring, absolutely. But part of it, I think we can all admit, is the responsibility of the individual. I remember not long ago, 50 years ago, it's been 50 years since I was walking through the doors of a university, completely overwhelmed. That gives you I only say that just to give you perspective. We face a challenge, and if you're not getting your needs met, do you sit back, you know, get sulky, or do you find ways to resolve? Some men, it's like coming, marching along, thinking I'll just trample over everything in my way, and intellectually, or we know there's always a barrier, there's limits that everybody faces. And for some, it takes them into some kind of pathology. Yeah, they're lost to us. Some will come up against the barrier and stop and feel tremendously discouraged. Oh my goodness. And so some of those barriers are significant. They are significant. Gender, the gender and racist barriers, I'm not talking to you about the disgust. I'm talking to you about the effect. How do you overcome those? Well, you shake my head. It's complicated, but you prevail. You prevail because you must. And for me, this Gentile, I learned my lessons from Eastern philosophies, from people that have been through incredible hardship and endured. Especially for me, I have a soft spot, not a soft spot. I'm sensitive to people who've lived the Holocaust. Oh, that's a trigger, isn't it? Yeah. We move on. So when people come to the door complaining about the order, well, it's often silence. You're not going to have an HR department coming out, you know, with all their legalese. You know, they learn how to fire people without the companies being sued. What alternatives are we? The alternative is, if you're part of something and you've come up against that barrier, you can go over it, you can go around it, you can go under it if you choose. But we need to, let's not presume that mindset is available to everybody. No, it isn't. You can figure it out with enough time on this planet, you know. But we have this collective consciousness. All hail Carl Jung. But we observe, we learn from what we read, the ideas of other people. We learn by the effects of the people around us that are supposed to care for us and protect us. And we learn from our perception. We learn, perhaps, who we can and can't trust. So are we stopped by the efforts of other people who for whatever reason can feel that they can benefit by stopping us, right, keeping us in our place? Masonry always I think fits in that sort of end of the bell curve. I'm not sure which end, But that end of the bell curve, it's not the big, the curve in the center. No, it's not that. It's on the edges. The alternative. And let's begin with the things that we may presume, but we really don't know. How do you know, you know, how do you know if you're examining yourself, how do you know what you know, what you're thinking is the truth? Well, it's my thought and it's mine. So, and I'm an honest guy because I say so. And the hell with you, don't be looking at how I act. My goodness, how dare you to judge? You've heard it all before. Yes, yes, yes. The work is simple. If a person is trustworthy, you pick it up in what they say. But we also learn about the individuals by what they do. Oh, there you go, masonry again. Always tying imagination with action. Great ideas, they need action. They need that gravity to pull them towards something substantive, to give the matter mass. We need that action. How are you going to act on it? And what can you do with it? Well, let's see. Let's try. Masonry offers that on different levels. But when a fellow, offering tales out of school, I'm not. I'm talking about the unfortunate or misguided kind of guys that are come to our doors expecting that something is going to be given to them. And that part of that is that play on words, you know, making good men better. It's always that notion that this is a passive kind of a forum. You know, you're going to take you, whatever state you're in, and we're going to make you into something more. So, and through our initiations, you know that we do all of that beautiful language and carry on those obligations under this atmosphere of trust. The first step, you need to trust. To say that the limit is about the order is like saying, I hate physics or I hate mathematics because I'm not good at it. I would be surprised if you were good at it, given the caliber of teachers and mentors. Do you find anyone? Mine came at me with a belt and a strap, and you know that kind of learning, you know, that kind of so-called teaching, bullying, stupidity, whatever you want to call it. But that's not exactly the kind of environment that we're talking about when we're. But for some boys who have been treated harshly, that's all that they know. And they feel that if you're talking about self-discipline, it's punching the hell out of or dominating the weaker, emphasizing the weakness rather than emphasizing the strength. That's a very bleak or cynical sense of the world, isn't it? Why would we think that would be scrubbed off when somebody comes into the order, comes into a lodge? I think it isn't. So today I find a lot of people giving up, a lot of men for a lot of reasons, some of them are quite legitimate reasons, they're giving up on the Masonic scene. Masonry is formed so that it never has that sense of that it is exhausted. It's never empty. There's always something to contribute. And for a lot of us, that gives our lives significance and meaning and structure. It's very, very healthy. All of that is incredibly healthy. The caution is when you're left to your own device and somebody doesn't whisper to you, you know, this too shall pass. Don't try to discipline yourself so you're not looking for the flaws in the picture every single time, because my goodness, I love you like a brother, but you're always going to find flaws. If we wanted to get into the depth of it, why do you think that's your preoccupation? Likely because you feel so inadequate or so weak, so limited, that you need to focus on power structures or or your sense of humility. And how do you do that? Well, you target people that have, that are perceived to have some advantage or some power. Except that masonry sort of gives us a moment to pause and scratch our head and ask questions about what's really powerful. Well, it's is it truth? Is it love? You know, creepy as hell. is it this sense of connection, this sense of fraternity between all men? That I think is possible. And I try to live that like you do. Learning how to navigate around the political strata and the religious strata, that takes a bit of finesse. And learning to do that without, aha, gotcha. You know, that's that right or wrong, black and white worldview. There's nothing nuanced. Yeah, really. Well, there is. And then just because people say it, may help me to understand it. You know, the words prove what you're saying. Qualify your opinion. Before you start to try and convince me that the moon doesn't exist and the world is flat. It is imaginative. We need an imagination to make ourselves into believers, I think. Can you imagine, before you ask a Master Mason what about you? Tell me about your strengths. Tell me about your weaknesses. Tell me what you want. And then we'll talk about what you need. And by the way, how are you when those things are pointed out? Do you get all fluffy about, jazz hands running around? Oh my goodness, don't tell me I have needs. No, I don't. I'm not, as long as it's like the old people that step out in a busy street and just walk across the street. And the rule here is, the safety here, the immortality is, as long as you do not look up and make contact with the drivers coming at you, you're safe. In other words, if that crazy old person lives or dies, it's not because they stepped off the curb in a dangerous situation. It's that they've been able to ignore the threat. And if you want to if you would caution them with a little beep on your horn about the danger that they're in, watch the reaction. That reaction is what we're seeing is vulnerability, make the decision anymore. So we have to. Would we point these things out? I hardly think that's the way to build up, build and work with an apprentice, by pointing out their flaws or working on those. I'm in every way superior to you. So sit there and just, by the way, you might as well take notes and shut up. Well, if you can do that, if you know how to instill a sense of respect without saying words, then that's an approach for you. But bullying a student into submission, that's certainly not the way of masonry. The way of masonry is complicated. It's not for everybody. I don't find that it's hard. For a lot of people, it comes natural. Even for you, see little children, it's just a natural way of learning. And then you see grown people with the immaturity that's clouded their judgment forever. What do you say? Maybe on their deathbed they'll realize, okay, I'm not their creator. But what we do in the meantime is show a way of life, a way of thinking. and invite other people and invite the apprentice and say, you know, this is not much, but it's pretty damn good. Here, I'm going to try and convince you that music is worthwhile, and then we're going to try and convince you that there is value to poetry. But before you get into all of that, kick back with this. This is a Jerry Mulligan tune. Tell me when. Oh, my. What a nice way to start. Start the show. Here, a commentary. What I'm working on today is the idea of a loneliness and solitude. Here, a rare state of mind is what I call this. Darned difficult to balance the concepts of masonry. Damn near impossible to balance them when first exposed. Masonry is best read, according in my opinion, with an inquiring mindset. If we trust masonry is a source of first principles, like how things start, we go on to share the excitement of discovering capacities we had not yet experienced. It's like, oh, that's how that started. That's why that is the way it is. Rarely does a young man have a sense of how to do it, but at a tender age, he will begin to understand necessities and extravagances, limitless erosion, falling into a life where the only intimacy is with a drug-driven state of conclusion. Pick your drug of choice, you know, money, caffeine, nicotine, cocaine, whatever. Alcohol, or driven to earn a reputation that exalts his lineage and himself. The sages who influenced our design were aware that what holds humanity together are commonalities at the heart of being human. We find this when we are doing comparative readings. If we look for similarities in scripture and philosophy, they are there. But that does not stop zealots from pointing out the opposite. For men with low expectations, clustering together against a common foe may be the only affirmation they have. Hatred and fear. Masonry isn't a thing as much as it is a concept. Men who espouse those concepts are influential, wherever they be, live or dead. They are a counterpoint to some unpleasant versions of rule of law. Gandhi brought a warring nation to its knees without raising a fist. Conscience is a nasty combatant for those unfamiliar with their own. If masonry were a large diamond, the facets would be stunning. We would give them names. and ascribe them a certain geometry in their relationships. Ha! It might be a symbol of all that is good. How would it feel to bring it out every time we are together and never, ever talk about it? Would we believe boredom wouldn't affect the crowd? How would it feel to bring it out every time we're together and never talk about it? Likely we would take it out but have no idea why. Except that there is that small gathering who are inspired by it. What do they know? What has escaped us? It's just an expensive stone. Right? Do you want to linger? Do you want to sit down and join me? We'll share a conversation. We'll sip something warm and soothing. Oh, you're more than welcome to it. I think I'm drawn to poetry because it has impact. I think it's like can you live without knowing rhetoric or being taught it? Well, I think it's kind of a shame when Masonry has these skill sets not to share them with you or with the entered apprentice. And certainly I think it's been hard when we put men that haven't had any of that training in positions where they're doing our planning for us. I think you can see how it would just lead to our construction being quite, confusing. Poor construction. What is it about masonry, about poetry? Is it that poetry helps us undergo transformation? Is it that it helps us to understand our emotional state? Is it true? The poet gives up certain things that I think is very brave, But why is it important? Poetry, it is said, and this is for you to decide. This is not like, is this science? I think it probably is if you do a deep dive. It's an art form, this poetry. It's been around for centuries, and it can be used to tell stories and inspire people. Well, we know that entire cultures have passed on their lessons through these magnificent poems. Many famous authors and poets have said that poetry is one of the most important forms of expression there is. So here in Canada, I think it's time that men can take off the blinkers and not feel emasculated by it all. They can actually wear a pink shirt without feeling that it's effeminate. That was two department stores that decided that blue was for boys and pink was for girls. Help them sell more product. Boy, did we buy into that, eh? Poetry can help us communicate our thoughts and feelings. And the proofing of this is whether you do the experiment for yourself or not. It's like just because you don't know it, you can invalidate it. Well, go right ahead. Yeah. Poetry has the power to touch our hearts and minds. Poetry can help us express ourselves in a healthy and cathartic way. Can be a great outlet for our emotions and help us communicate our feelings in a safe and non-judgmental way. Writing poetry can also be a great way to process thoughts and feelings about difficult life experiences. So I would suggest to you, write a poem. You don't necessarily need to share it or publish it. Just write. And think about it, you, all by yourself. Poetry can also be a great way to connect with others who may be going through very similar experiences. When we read or hear another person's poem, we can often empathize with their experiences and feel a deep connection with them. And this can be very powerful and a healing experience. Where I am, we are permitted to embrace poetry twice a year. May old acquaintance be forgotten. Thank you, Robbie Burns. In Flanders Fields, where poppies grow. Oh, those are legitimate. And the book of poetry in the soldier's backpack, we won't mention that, because he must be effeminate, huh? If he has that kind of sense. But what's there to be sensible about? Poetry can be a form of therapy. I'm not saying therapy is about weakness. Everybody in the world, I think, can benefit from sitting down with a therapist. Everybody. But who has that opportunity? Poetry can help increase our understanding of self and the world around. It can help us see the world in new and unexpected ways. And we're going to do that with the poem that I've selected for us today. We can explore emotions and experiences of others. And poetry can help us better understand our own feelings and motivations. Now, you're going to hear, they put this in metaphor. We're putting this man's life in metaphor. This is, it's a simple poem, and it's one of the most famous written by this author, William Wordsworth. If you haven't discovered him, I'd say you want to learn from one of the pillars of masonry. This is a good artist to begin to understand. 1770 kind of guy. So he was born after we had institution and after we had ritual. Yeah. But this would be the stuff the early masons would be reading him. Yeah. And he has an interesting life. Lived in the Lake District. Oh, beautiful, huh? Yeah. Anyway, they moved around. You know, we can follow, you know, because he did something significant, we can follow him around. This is a poem, quite one of his more famous poems. And he entitled it, I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud. And at first glance, you might think this is about loneliness and isolation. Or is it about solitude? Is this about enjoying your own solitude? Have you? Where you're not trying to comply or with anybody, but you're looking at your within. Satisfy yourself, your solitude. Do you have an entertainer, something that completely satisfies you that may make no sense to the world around you? Poetry. Me, I'm such a fan of what I think is the finest music, opera. You know, if you notice a singer that searches for the note, it's different than in opera where they hit the note. and somebody that has, you can imagine, it's like anything else. If you spend a lot of time developing it, you develop an expertise. Imagine people developing an expertise in singing, in music. Tell me about your solitude. Do you sketch? Do you listen to? Does a certain type of music inspire you? And do you indulge yourself? And then after, what effect? You know, obviously it elates, gets those good, very positive hormones flowing. Here, tell me what you experienced. This is just four stanzas, and it's the famous one. Yeah, sometimes it's called the daffodils, but it's not. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils beside the lake, beneath the trees fluttering and dancing in the breeze. Continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, that stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay, 10,000 I saw at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance. Memories up there, we're all up there floating by, and we're looking down at the crowd, and his crowd is represented by these little daffodils. And the waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. They were happy. Yeah? A poet could not be gay, could not but be gay in such a jocund company. I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft, when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon my inward eye. He remembers. They flash upon my inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude. Ha ha ha! And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils. I'll go down. I'll enjoy the solitude. And then that fills me with so much. And when I join that crowd, I'm happy. I'm happy. I notice I feel good. Maybe I smile a little more. Maybe I say hello to the person walking by in the street. I know I'm one of those people that will say hi. And it's interesting how often a person might be lost in their own thoughts and be a bit shocked that somebody would actually smile and give them a greeting in passing. And I kind of like that. Don't you? I think. Bill Evans, eh? It's like it becomes part of the music he plays. Here, we're going to tuck into a piece of history today that I think is quite interesting. This is looking at some reflections, historical reflections, and something that's been troubling me on a Masonic level, challenging me on a Masonic level, has been these notions of perfection and excellence that really are pretty meaningless unless they have substance put, unless you operationalize them. It's like, doesn't really have much meaning and nothing that we can really grasp. I can't, it's like chasing an illusion. This illusion of freedom. Well, I need to break that down, and I do that by listening. Tell me what that means, and tell me where that applies, and then I can make some sense out of how you handle the idea, that concept, and how he does, and how he does, and how he does. True fraternity and equality stood as the ideals sought by every lodge. This is an historian talking. Freemasons knew full well that in the larger society there were ranks and stations, but inside the lodges, in the citizenry of them, we are members of one body to which we all belong. In our society, there is this equality wherein we know no station. Even monarchs would espouse equality. Here's a nice story. Joseph II of Austria, who was said to hold equality as the very foundation of his conduct. Thus, he said he was un roi philosophe, the philosopher king. Masonic rhetoric about equality tried to relate it to enlightenment, but always to defer to the inequality of the larger society. One of the earliest continental constitutions, dated 1741, Lucerne, Switzerland, made the paradox presented by the ideal of equality explicit. Ah, let's hear. The Order of Freemasons is a society of confraternity and equality, and to this end is represented under the emblem of a level. Being a past Grand Senior Warden, I appreciate that. Represented under the emblem of a level, a brother renders to another brother the honor and deference that is justly due him in proportion to his rank in the civil society. Worshipping in the new temple of the enlightened may have made the tensions and hostilities born of rank and birth so endemic to 18th century societies more palatable. Get this, worshipping in the new temple of the enlightened, in other words, reflecting on this notion of equality, and mentioning that there are tensions and hostilities born to rank and birth, more palatable. To imagine these sentiments as purely and simply democratic is to miss the context wherein they were spoken. When we talk about our democratic features, are we talking about that with the same understanding today as it was 200 years ago? Well, when you put it that way, of course not. Within the Masonic temple, a new deity could be invoked. That's for next time. What is this deity that could be evoked? Deity? Nobody asked my permission. Well, obviously, we've reached that time in the program where we need to pull things together. I think you should be careful about these concepts of Freemasonry. I think you should, because if it changes you in some way, oh my. What if it changes you, you visit Masonic effects, all of a sudden, okay, go and check out poetry and see the effect, and just experience the effect. Well, but struggle. Tell yourself that you ought not to do it. Get through all those, if you want to live in your own head, go ahead and do that. But I'd ask you to apply a bit of self-discipline to this. It's like my friend that went to the yoga class once. Yeah, and wasn't feeling particularly flexible or spiritual after. Once. Mm-hmm. I suppose he would go to the temple or mosque once and then expect this awakening. He would be walking with the Buddha, open his eyes, the Buddha would be carrying on, and he would put on the saffron robe and say, oh, this hasn't changed me at all, this is all bogus. No, but the ideas permeate, and I think if you pointed your finger to me and said, is Masonry brainwashing? Well, we need to talk about that. And by the way, it is your round. It is your round. Is it brainwashing? Well, we come to these ideas. We're influenced, definitely. But we come to the ideas willingly, and we apply a sense of rationality that doesn't really fit with the definition of cultishness. Doesn't. Oh, there are the Aleister Crowley lookalikes running around today, but I have enough confidence in the principles of Masonry that we achieve that balance, you know? And we have lots of simple little metaphors and messages to help us, little mnemonics to help us to remind that we're looking for that balance. All these, we're looking on these spectrums, you know, all these, even this notion of dominance? We don't exist in this time space without these different forces and elements acting and reacting at a molecular level, and that includes us. It is so comforting to be asked to find balance in your life. Oh, well, that's easy for you to say. Well, it isn't. It's not meant to be easy. It's meant to be assuring that if I assign you to look for flaws in something, you will find them. What if I assign you to look for the best in you? And when you look up at me confused, what if I said to you, here's some tools that will help? And after a month with them, I will come back to you and ask you what the use of these tools has taught you about you. We'll just talk. I'm not going to judge you. No. Not all judgy. It's the opportunity. I'm curious. And in 3 months, I'll come back, if you don't mind, and I'll ask you the same question. What effect? What have you noticed? All that business with these tools. And there's sets of them. As you progress, you'll get different tools. Yeah. Different responsibilities, different insights. If we have any effect on each other, which I think we do, you and I may not be the philosopher kings, but we can be a pretty good version of who we are. We can examine our own lives, and it's a bit daunting, isn't it, when you look into your own weaknesses and face them and own them. That's where the honesty starts. And give ourselves some benefit of the doubt to not be walking mechanistic extrapolate, you know, that we're supposed to be in any way perfect. I don't have any clue what that is. Of course, that's the nature of Masonic effects. I can't tell you the difference between right and wrong. Not anymore. I've seen too much. You know, I know when I hear when I'm around honesty. I know when I'm around a man who is confident because he's not afraid to show his humility. I know that. And I see the struggle around. And I see the large numbers. I walk into the marketplace and it's what's popular. Give me something that satisfies me in the short run. None of this long-term conversation. No. And poetry, what are you? You must be gay if you're liking poetry. You know all that clutter. A lot of people these days. And it's the same thing. We always had people that were heavily opinionated. It's not changed today. Oh, we have new tools, but messaging is still the same. The new tools that we have, no matter how brilliant they are, if you have nothing to say, nobody's going to pay attention. That's the way life is. So as you go through your week committing those acts of random Masonic kindness, remember, I will appreciate that. And that will be affirming for the likes of me. And I'll do the same. And hopefully it'll be affirming to the likes of you. And to folks on the top of the earth in New Zealand or Japan or our listeners from China or Russia, yeah, or Turkey, or Oman, or South Sudan, or Ethiopia. We have listeners, yeah. And Zambia, we have listeners. And in Ireland, so, and in Britain, mm-hmm. And in North America, Latvia, mm-hmm. Brazil. Ah, thought I might forget. Hmm? It's a good day, wherever we are, because we're in it, or making the effort to try and understand. I look forward to being with you again soon. Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. Thanks for tuning in. And if you don't mind looking out, if there's one of your mates who you think might enjoy the program, pass it on. Yeah. Here. See you soon.